All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is the end of day 28. If you've made it this far, that means you've made it 672 hours into your non-smoking journey, and that is 40,320 minutes. And let's go for the seconds. What the fuck? It's almost 2.5 million seconds, and everybody should feel good about that. Give yourself a round of applause. And today, two things. Special day for me. It's my birthday. I'm 35 years old. And thank you. And the clapping you hear is the other reason why this episode is going to be special. I'm going to bring a guest along. This is my near and dear friend, Philippe. And he also has been smoking for quite a bit in his lifetime as well. I think for me, I smoked for maybe 23 years of my life. Phil, do you remember how old you were when you started smoking consistently?
I would say I think I was like 15 years old, so it's been almost 20 years.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I go straight into a question without even allowing you to
That's
say hi to the
all
people. You can say hi to
right.
everyone.
Hello, everyone. Hi there.
So now I had one. I'm going to start off with another particular question, and it's a big difference between your starting to smoke and mine. And I had touched on it a little bit in a previous episode, kind of hinting that I wanted to talk with one of my friends, and just how the atmospheres were a little bit different, and how this is one of the questions I wanted to ask. Your parents, both of them, smoked since you were born, correct? They were
Oh yeah.
both.
Oh yeah, I think they both smoked since they were in their teens as well.
Okay.
So
If your grandparents smoked as well.
that I don't know. I don't think they did. I don't know. I know my on my mom's side, neither one of them, no, neither one of her parents smoked. On my father's side, I'm not too sure. I don't have a solid answer on that one.
Curious. And because Anchor is the lovely technological marvel that it is, I'm having my podcast listeners over the course of infinite time that I'm able to add responses and call-ins and whatnot. So 10 years from now, we may still be getting call-ins that we add to it. But I'd like you to update us with any of the information you might not know to call in and say, hey, quick update. That way, people that are trying to follow along with this particular challenge of dropping smoking with a podcast buddy, they can come back and hear a fully fleshed out segment. But a question building upon our last question, do you know when your, like, say your mom, for example, when she decided to pick up cigarettes and what kind of maybe led her to it or what the world was like during that time?
It was I don't know. I know that I think she did it because it was a thing to do. I think it was cool. And I think
It was
that's
glamorous, right?
yeah, I think that's one of the things that started it for her. And for my dad, I don't know. My dad was in the military, and I think he might have sometime around when he joined the military is right around when he started smoking. And I don't know if those two correlate, but it's possible.
Yeah, traveling back into their era, they must have been teenagers in probably the 60s, I'm guessing, is when they were teens.
Yeah, my father was a teenager in the 60s. He was a young teenager in the 60s. I think by the 70s, he was 17. And my mom was definitely a teenager, and she was the cradle robber between the two of them. So she was full bore late teens in the 60s.
Your mom's older.
Yeah, my
Wow.
mom's older. My mom's I think 7 years older than my father.
What? Okay, I never put that together, man.
Yeah, dude.
Wow, I've known you forever and your family, and I've never pieced that. I've never thought to ask that. Interesting. That's cool that that comes up in this segment here. Going back into that era, though, It was highly glamorized in just about every media art form you could imagine. And I even think in that era, it was being solicited as it could be healthy for you,
Yeah,
which is
I think I
crazy.
remember seeing advertisements for that, like it gets rid of headaches or something like that. Just blatant lies
Yeah,
about
man,
cigarettes and their health benefits. Back
it
then, you
was.
could smoke in the supermarket. There were ashtrays on the little push carts, and you could walk around and have a cigarette while you were doing your shopping, which to me is just so disgusting. Like,
Oh
so
my
disgusting.
God. Yeah, I
Yeah.
didn't even know that was a thing.
I remember
I
my
knew like
stepmother.
airplanes, yeah.
Oh yeah, and I remember my stepmother telling me about sitting in doctor's office waiting rooms and people smoking and having cigarettes in the waiting room for the doctor's office. Can you imagine?
Or the doctor like smoking while they're
Oh
assisting
man.
you.
It was
Wow.
such a so is such a different social time. Oh my God.
Well, babies were being born in those hospitals too. I mean,
Yep.
that is crazy. Okay, well, we've come a long way
Yeah, we've come a long
since
way.
that.
There's a
Well,
lot
let
more
me.
stigma around it now.
There rightfully so, though.
Yeah,
Rightfully so.
absolutely.
And how many
Absolutely.
people got lung cancer that never even touched a cigarette
Yeah.
from the second hand of being in restaurants? I mean, for the young listeners, especially the ones that are in the future here that haven't even discovered the podcast yet or just now discovering it, and it's been recorded a decade prior, there you got to understand there was cigarette smoking anywhere you went. It was
Yep.
allowed. There
Oh,
was
yeah.
no off limits to it. Taxi cabs all smelled like cigarettes. Every airplane you went on smelled like cigarettes. And in a flight, that's 2 hours long, something of that nature, and you're in a cabin with closed off air that's just recycling in and out.
20,000 feet up in the air, too. So
Yeah.
you're getting all kinds of disgusting high from that.
You're getting more of the secondhand, like the carbon monoxide side of that than you are oxygen.
My
But you're.
just to one up on that, my grandfather owned a little 4-seater plane. I don't know if you remember that,
I remember
but
hearing about it, yes.
my father, when we'd go flying, would smoke in the plane while we were flying. So we'd be at about 10,000 feet, and he'd be lighting up a GPC and having a smoke while we were flying in this little tiny plane. It
See,
was crazy.
I was going to ask you that, but I didn't want to throw you under the bus or throw your dad under the bus. But my grandfather used to do the same thing. We would be driving around in his Cadillac, and he'd be smoking with the windows rolled up
Oh yeah,
and hotboxing it
it's
with a
so gross.
cigarette, man.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I brought it up on the podcast or not. Forgive me, guys, if I'm repeating myself. But my grandfather, when I was about 2 years old, he was sitting out on the porch of my aunt's house for, I think we got together for Christmas or something. He's sitting on the porch smoking a wooden pipe. And I go up to him curious and say, "What's that?" And he goes, "This is my pipe." And I say, "Can I try it?" And he says, "Yes." And they got a picture of me smoking this wooden pipe at 2 years old. That was not a big deal. You're not
No.
gonna, you can't even see that here without people going to jail anymore
Yep.
in this day and age. And then I go back, I don't know, when I was 6 or 7 years old to go visit him again. And sure enough, I wanted to hit the pipe and he didn't mind it. Now, tobacco, pipe tobacco is so much different, than cigarette, smoking because the pipe gets resonated. And it ends up getting coated much like an ashtray that's got heavily usage, lots of usage on it, and hasn't been cleaned out. So yeah, the pipe's quite a bit nastier in regards to that. But he would smoke indoors. There was a black circle above his chair where he sat in the living
Oh my God.
room. It's crazy. All the evidence was around them. But they didn't really put two and two together that if it can do that to the walls, what's it doing to the inside of my body or the inside of the people's bodies around us? And it wasn't until they start doing biopsies, and big tobacco starts getting in trouble for one thing after another, that it really gets exposed for what it is. Let me bring it back to the present, to, or not necessarily the present, but to your lifetime. When did you, first of all, cigarettes are very accessible to you because your parents smoke, correct? Like if you wanted to, you could just take one of your parents without them noticing, because you have a kid for so long. Like I'm even guilty of this. I would leave my packs of cigarettes and my lighters around the house.
Absolutely.
And I thoroughly educated my kids into not smoking. They've seen my struggle with it and are very turned off by it. Not to say that they still won't, but I got so comfortable that I left that stuff around. I mean, was it kind of the same circumstance in your household where, you know, if you really wanted to, you could have grabbed for it?
We could totally have done that, but we were too afraid of getting caught. I think every once in a while we would take one. And at the very beginning, it was like we weren't even inhaling. Like we were just smoking a cigarette just because that's just, we thought we were, you know, the coolest cats on the block. Like, ooh, look at us smoke, you know. And like I was a rebellious little youth. And I don't know if you remember this, but you used to be able to buy cigarettes in the grocery store aisle. Like they weren't locked up and back in a little special customer service area and looked like they are in grocery stores now. Like they used to be just blatant, like you were reaching out to get were trying to get a can of soup. It was the same thing. So me being a rebellious youth with a bad influence of an older brother, we used to go to the supermarket and we'd steal like 3 packs of cigarettes. And I remember stealing a pack of Benson and Hedges menthols and just thinking they were like the greatest thing on the planet. Like, oh my gosh, a menthol cigarette. This is insane. You know,
you're going to find this wild, but me and best friend growing up, Daniel, we both stole from a gas station back then. Also, the cigarettes were, so here, I'm going to name a couple different places so the audience kind of understands this and can visualize it. In a gas station, the cigarettes would be right up front where you would see nowadays where bubblegum is sold. Or lighters are sold. It was all lined up right there in front of you, and you didn't have to ask for the cashier to grab it for you. You could just pick it off the shelf, put it down, and purchase it. It was right there in your face.
Isn't that mind blowing now? Looking back on that now, it's just like that blows my mind.
Yeah, it's like we were kind of oblivious to the type of marketing that was going on and how heavily it was being pushed. It was in the forefront of everything. As far as stores are concerned, I remember at a point in time when you went to check out, in the actual checkout lane, there were packs of cigarettes there.
Yep.
Where now there's candy bars, and maybe that's something to say with how we're sold candy bars and sweets and unhealthy stuff for us, but used to be cigarettes right there. And another place that is incredibly interesting that this even existed was vending machines. And my first pack of cigarettes that I actually purchased of my own was a vending machine in a bowling alley. You'd put your money in and you'd pull this cord out and the pack of cigarettes would drop. I did that when I was maybe 11 years old at best, and I looked 11. I did not look like an old 11-year-old. And I bought Camel unfiltered wides.
Oh my God.
I didn't know what I was doing, dude. I just picked this one knob, pulled, and got it. So fast forward back to what you were saying, or bringing it back to what you were saying, me and Daniel used to go to the gas station and I would purchase something or Daniel would purchase something. We'd take turns who did this. And the other person would have a jacket and they would take packs and put them in their pockets because the cigarettes were so out in front that the people at the register couldn't even directly see them.
Yeah.
They were just like right there. So I would be buying something, having the cash register's attention on me, the clerk, his attention on me, while Daniel's stuffing his jacket's full of cigarettes. And guess what kind we would end up getting more often than not, because they were just always there up front? Benson and
Oh, those,
Hedges menthols.
that's so funny.
Yeah,
That
so
is so
that brought
funny.
me back into that right there, just thinking about that. So do you remember the first time you tried a cigarette, and how, were you the one that was interested? Did somebody else go, "Hey, let's try this"? How did that come
I
about
don't
for you?
even remember. I mean, both of my parents smoked and smoked with us in the car with the windows up, you know, which was just, it just blows my mind. But they used to, so I already had from a ripe young age nicotine flowing through my system, you know. So I think the first time I ever had a cigarette was probably shortly after birth.
Oh, God damn
But
it.
I don't really remember the first time that I ever did. I remember the many occurrences that were around the same time, but I don't remember the first time. I remember the
Other.
first time that I thought that this is something that I'm going to get addicted to. I remember that. But I don't remember the first time, like that, my actual first cigarette.
Well, tell me about that.
That one was, I was, I think, 15 or 16. I was 15 years old. And I had been at that point smoking cloves on the weekends with friends at parties and stuff like that because cloves were so cool. And then this girl I liked was a smoker. And so I started smoking no longer just on the weekends when I was hanging out with friends. And I started smoking when I was around this girl. And I was like, I remember thinking to myself, if you continue this, you're not going to be able to stop smoking. I remember that specific thought.
If I remember correctly, this was during the time I was around.
Yeah,
Cause...
this was shortly because when you and I met, I had already been, I was already a smoker. But this is right around that time. This is probably 6 months before you and I met.
Okay, because I remember a point in time, and you're one of the few people that I've ever seen do this, but you had tried to condition yourself. You were setting rules in place for yourself where other people were not. You were actually aware of your smoking addiction, and you were trying to mitigate it. I don't know if, God, I didn't even think about that until you just said this right now, but I clearly recall it now, because this at the time we were smoking Parliaments, because they had a buy one get one free special. They were also really good cigarettes. Ended up being the more expensive ones later on down the road, who also is owned by Benson and Hedges.
That's really funny.
But I remember you saying, okay, I'm only going to do this at this particular time frame. And I think you even tried to revert back to that rule at one point where you would only smoke on weekends, or you would only smoke on various occasions. You were the only person I know trying to mitigate that. Everybody else was just like full-blown smoking, completely unconscious of it, and
I
didn't
think I was
even pay
trying to
attention.
prevent. In hindsight, I think I was trying to prevent becoming my parents in that, like, in the regard to smoking. I think I was trying to because I was so grossed out by smoking in the house and so grossed out by smoking in cars with the windows up. Like, I'm a smoker now and I will still smoke in my car, which is gross because when I quit smoking, when I made it for like 4 some odd months, when I quit smoking, I could still smell it in my car and it just absolutely grossed me out.
Isn't it raunchy? Yeah, the after
That's so
smell
bad. It
and it
smells like
closed
Las
off.
Vegas. It smells
Yeah.
like Las Vegas in the 90s, is what it smells like.
Well, question for you. Going into that, so you were able to quit for 4 months, which is a pretty long stretch of time.
Right,
That's,
I had it.
yeah, that's past the big hurdle. It's getting to the point where it's not a constant. It's also reprogramming your daily activity to do
Right.
things without smoking. which smoking's so deeply embedded into a smoker's life that it takes a substantial amount of time to do that. And you have to
Oh,
recondition
absolutely.
yourself. But you were past that point. So part of the reason I wanted to do this with you is I wanted to kind of draw from your tool set of things that helped you be successful and helped those around you help you be successful. And how did you achieve? And I know it took many, many attempts to get to the 4 month period, but how did you, what was your tool set looking like when you did achieve that? What were some things that you put in motion to help you actually put it down for that substantial amount of time?
So my initial, so I tried to quit hundreds of times, and I don't remember who said it to me. I think it was a doctor or someone, and they wanted to give me Wellbutrin or Chantix or something like that. And I was like, no, like I don't want to do that. I heard it gives you crazy dreams, and if it works for you, then by all means, that's freaking amazing. But it wasn't a tool that I wanted to use. I didn't want to put more drugs in my body to try to kick another habit. So I instead, after failure after failure after failure after failure, my doctor was just like, just keep trying. Don't, you may fail at quitting 100 different times, but succeed on the 101st. So don't quit quitting. Like, don't be hard on yourself. Don't beat yourself up. If you smoke while you're trying to quit, just accept it. Do your best not to, but if you do it, don't just, it's not the end of the world. You've already been smoking for so long that that one cigarette is the only thing that's going to do is set you back in your addiction. And to not beat yourself up over it. So I went, the last time I quit, I went into it just saying, like, if you fail, don't let it eat you up inside. Just continue to go.
Which is great advice. I mean, that's exceptional advice because people, you, their failures weigh people down. It's
Absolutely.
very, very apparent that in human nature, when failure's involved, it can be mentally crippling, and it can also be used as an excuse to be dismissive and just say, I can't do it and walk away from
Right.
it. And there's no real incentive to keep trying if you accept that kind of defeat. And failure makes it, if you focus on failure and you attack yourself for failing and for being human and for not being able to overcome something, especially something that's chemically bound to you and altered your how your brain actually works. If you can't accept that as a growing process rather than just a failure, it's very easy to just accept it and be passive and just go,
Right.
well, I guess I'm going to be a smoker.
It's easy to say, well, I had that one, I guess I'm just gonna go buy a pack now. Like, it's so easy to fall back in and allow yourself to victimize yourself in that. And on top of that, it's also the addiction that's talking to you at that point too. It's not just you feeling bad for yourself because you failed and you had a cigarette. Your addiction is like, well, you failed, you're not going to do this, just go buy a pack, like whatever. You and I are going to sit down and have a pack of cigarettes and it's going to be the greatest thing in the world. Like, that's your addiction talking. That's not your logical brain saying, like, oh, well, you suck. So having that knowledge and saying, like, if you misstep, it's okay, don't stop trying. So
That's excellent advice that you gave me.
the follow-up on that was I prepared myself for it. So a month before I quit smoking, I picked a quit date, which was the day after my birthday, actually. And for the month leading up to it, I gave myself like a mantra. Your brain is most susceptible to information and learning, right when you wake up and right before you go to bed. So I would use this mantra, that, and you can, it's kind of a fill in the blank thing. Anyone can do it. And it's, it goes like this. So it's blank. So it's blank is it's for me, it was March 27th. It's March 27th. So you say a date and you visualize that day. It's March 27th and I feel wonderful because I don't taste or smell like cigarettes and I don't feel like shit because I am not smoking. So your statement that you're going to build off of, it's the day and I feel blank because blank. So you set that up, and before you go at bed at night, you say this to yourself, and you say the same thing every day. Before you go to bed, you say, you know, it's this day, I feel this way because, and you visualize it, and you really put yourself in your future shoes and visualize sitting there and feeling that way. You feel great. You feel you don't smell like smoke or whatever it is, whatever emotion you want to connect to that thought process. And before you go to bed, you say it right when you wake up in the morning, as you know, if you're someone who drinks coffee and you're having your coffee, or if you're someone who just gets up and has an apple to really like get yourself flowing, just depending on what your daily routine is, you repeat that to yourself just one time out loud. And feel it and place yourself in that moment.
So let me ask you about something. Let me ask you a question on that particular tool set, the mantra. How long did you do that for out of the 4-month process? Because one of the things that we're going to end up bringing up, and I'm actually going to bring it up and have a bigger discussion on day 30, the final day, talking about no longer, I'm going to bring up the Goldfinger song. Okay. no longer counting the days and focusing on how much time has passed, because once you hit the 30-day mark, you've relearned, what did they say? It takes 2 weeks to form a habit of consistent behavior, something of that nature.
21 days.
At this point, you've went 21 days and a week forming habits of non-smoking. So at that point, you know, you have to stop letting go of thinking about it every day, because that leads to the life of no longer missing it at all. And when I quit for the entire year, I had to do that at some point. And I actually was kind of blown away the first time that I realized, hey, I haven't thought about a cigarette in like 2 weeks. What the fuck? And going from thinking about it, like the complete panic of the first 72 hours and it being the only thing you can think about, to I just went a huge stretch of time. And I'd never, since the time I started smoking, I'd never had that. And to me, it was just completely mind blowing. So out of your 4-month period, did you ever get to the point where you didn't do the mantra, or were you super afraid that you were going to fall back into smoking? Because it is a real fear, especially when you enjoy it. How did that play out for you?
So the mantra for me was just for the lead up. Okay. Once I hit my day zero, if you will, I just focused on how I felt. And really, I combined kind of like self-talk with a quit smoking tool on an app. I think it's called Smoke Free. It like lets you know, you know, how much money you've saved since you've quit smoking, what's happening with your body. It gives you milestones and stuff like that. So that is kind of where I put my primary focus. And I also put my focus, because I'm a really active person. So I hike, I play sport, I play Ultimate Frisbee, which is just basically running up and down a field for 3 hours, you know. So I watched, I had this app that was telling me what was going on inside of my body, how much money I was saving, how many cigarettes I haven't smoked, and watched my body and like really kind of fell in love with the way I felt and the way that my body looked, because I've been like a moderately skinny dude my whole life, and like I gained some weight and like gained muscle mass, and like instead of having cigarettes I was having snacks during the day. Oh, and that's another thing, snack as much as possible, but I'm not talking about like Skittles and Snickers. I'm talking about like bring, if you work in an office, bring a little bag of baby carrots, mm-hmm. you know,
or like almonds. Things with right. omega fats.
Absolutely. Yeah. So snack healthy. Don't replace one addiction with a sugar addiction. You know?
Mm-hmm. And that's a hard one to cut out too. That was a brutal one.
So I would say that the mantra stops your last night before you, the last night as a smoker, and the next day you're a non-smoker, and you focus on that good feeling. Because what you've done in that month lead up is you've retrained your brain to new learning. And so that day comes and you've already subconsciously basically tricked your brain into, I do feel good. I do feel this way, you know? And so when I quit and kept going forward, I focused on the things that were good about not smoking, the things that I noticed in my body, in my lungs, in my lung capacity. And really focused on seeing what my body was doing without this substance in it. And it was absolutely just marvelous.
And so it's probably good to just interject here and say, it's important to be realistic with your mantras, guys. Don't set it outside of actualization and things that can occur. Don't say, I'm going to be a millionaire if I quit smoking. You're not day one going to feel like a millionaire from that. Right. You need to keep it realistic. You need to set your incentives in context, in proper context while you're doing your planning. So you need to find out what your incentives are. If it's saving money, if it's, you know, smelling better, if it's being a more attractive potential mate to somebody, say you're single and you're trying to, you know, find the right person. A lot of the right people out there, guys, just so you know, a lot of the right people don't smoke, and they're very, very turned off by smokers. It sucks that they're not looking at you as just like, who are you as a human being? But they also don't want to be with somebody that might have a short lifespan. And they might also understand the behavior that comes along with people that are addicted to smoking. It can be a struggle at sometimes. I don't say it's as extreme as some other substances, but it can be, we can be irritable and agitated as people
are making
the nicotine. So whatever your incentive is, you got to get that lined up. Maybe it's for your kids. You want to quit before they get to the age to, you know, try it out, or who knows, you know, there's a million different things out there. For me, I'll say that one of my major incentives was, I wanted to, and I've said this in earlier episodes, I wanted to at least see what 1 year was like without it, since I've dedicated 23 of my life, more than half my life, to not ever taking a break. I figured I owed it to myself to at least see what 1 year. And if that year sucked because I couldn't have my cigarette and, you know, I wasn't doing the thing that I enjoy to do, so be it. But I need to at least do that so I can feel good about the decision of smoking the rest of my life, the remainder of my life. And the other incentive is I wanted to show my kids that it's something that I could conquer. And that if they ever were to fall into something that was beyond them and they struggled with, that if they really, really dedicated the time and just was able to endure the torture of the first week of whatever it is, or even the first 30 days, they could put it past them and they could rise above it. So your incentives are going to be super, super important. Make them realistic and set those mantras the month, maybe 2 months leading up to it. So when you are quitting smoking, you actually put it down. You, like Philippe said, you can feel that way. you can
and be proud of it and flaunt it. Tell every single person you know. It's that pride that you get and feel during that time is bar none. There's hardly any other feeling like it. And be proud of one day. Be proud of 3 days. Be proud of a week. You know, and I'm serious. Tell the freaking cashier at the grocery store while you're shopping. Be like, yeah, I haven't had a cigarette in 3 days. People will get behind you and support you, and it's a wonderful thing. So take that pride and use that pride as a tool for yourself, because you're doing something that is absolutely magnificent and extremely difficult.
How long did it take? Because I know you enjoy beer and you enjoy various different spirits, but you're a drinker as well. And you've paired, as many of us have, cigarettes and drinking together, which in the moment of things seems like the greatest combination ever. I actually didn't, I didn't really ever pair coffee and cigarettes, but I certainly paired drinking alcohol and cigarettes. And I would smoke like a chimney when I was drinking. I could clear out twice as many cigarettes in a day.
Oh, yeah.
In a short period of time, mind you, as well. So not only would I wake up feeling like crap from whatever alcohol I was drinking, I also felt like I had completely smoked my lungs, throat, and nose out when I woke up the next morning, completely dry in the face.
Disgusting feeling too.
It's a raunchy feeling. So, yeah, how long did you set a kind of like a time period of, okay, I'm not going to drink until I at least hit this benchmark? How long did you push that out, if you did it all? And how skeptical were you trying to drink again without it? And how much of a struggle and fight was that to kind of stay away from it? Tell me about that.
So I still, because I love craft beer. I love a good sour beer. And I love wine. So that's something that we drink wine in our house, and every once in a while we have craft beer in our house. And like that was no problem. I could sit at home and have a couple pints of craft beer or a couple glasses of wine and be okay. Like it obviously heightened my want for a cigarette, because I mean, for my entire developed life, even before I was drinking, I was smoking. That was just my thing. Like if you're drinking, you're having a cigarette. Like, so at home, it wasn't that bad. What I did do is we would go out to see friends or go out to the bars with my fiance. I would just drink soda water. I'd be there. And
she's smiling right now. Is she next to you? Smiling.
No, she's in the other room.
She's smiling. So she gets called fiance.
No, it's okay. I think I smile when I say it too. So I think for the first couple, I was probably like 2 or 3 weeks, I didn't drink when we went out. I would drink soda water. And I'm not big on soda. Name drop Taco Bell Baja Blast is my favorite thing in the world, and I'll drink it while I'm there. But I'm not a big soda fan, so I would just drink soda water and kind of go with it, because then I wouldn't be, because I know everyone in our town and I know all the smokers. And if I'm drinking and we're out, I know who I can get a cigarette from. And I just didn't fully trust myself until probably about a month into the process to do it. And then at that point it was a non-starter, because I was past my thinking about it every second of the day phase and was just more into the learning my new life with all of my new free time, you know?
Okay. I'm going to ask you a couple quick questions here, because I know I'm taking a lot of your time here. We're at the 40 minute mark. Quick questions. First of all, I want to talk about the kind of like the, I don't want you to feel shame about it, but a lot of people do feel shame. I want to talk about what happened with the relapse. You don't have to give me the stressful scenario, but I know it ends with stress. It always does
Yeah,
with
it
everybody.
always does.
It is a stressful situation that pops up, and our nature that we programmed to ourselves for decades at this point is to, okay, wicked stress. We know we've been learned or taught, and we've learned to deal with our stress with cigarettes as that coping mechanism. That'll be the thing that'll make it easier to deal with, or calming, or just it feels. It, like that movie Ratatouille. Have you ever seen that? Where
It's been a really, really long time.
film critic sits down at some point in time in the movie towards the end. He's judgmental of a poor dish that gets served to him, and it's actually a dish of ratatouille. When he takes a bite out of it, he's immediately sent back to his childhood comfort food. And so I think that nicotine addiction works the same way. When we get super stressed out, we want something to comfort us. And we lead to that. So you don't have to tell me what stressed you out, but do you remember that moment of, oh, I'm gonna get a cigarette, or did you smoke a cigarette and it led to a pack of cigarettes? How, what was the order of events? Did you immediately just get stressed out and go buy a pack, or were you like, I'm stressed, somebody give me a cigarette, and then it.
I had like the perfect shitstorm of multiple stressors at that point in my life, and I was like at my wit's end. And then on top of that, had been drinking, and we were having a gathering at our house, and it just like it was any other thing, it just happened. Like it was just like, cool, whatever, I'll do this. I was talking to one of my friends who was smoking a cigarette, and it was a friend that I rarely see, and I don't think he necessarily knew that I had quit smoking, and just handed one off to me. And that was the beginning of the end. I think I smoked like 4 or 5 cigarettes that night, and then the next day was over it. I was like, cool, you screwed up. Like, it's not going to become a thing. You're good. And pushed forward. And that was good in its own right. But then it made it easier because then, I had the nicotine back in me and I went and did it and I smoked those cigarettes and the next day was like, you're not doing this again, whatever. And continued on. And then it was like the nicotine, the addicted part of my brain was like, well, hey, you did that one time and everything was fine. You can do it again. And that's where it gets you, is that like you're fine. As soon as you think you're fine, you know that it's you're no longer in control of your addiction, your addiction's in control of you.
Yes.
When you start telling yourself like, no, you'll be fine, you did it before and everything was fine, so you can just do it again,
Or just one pack, and then we'll be good at that. The problem with that is when you relapse, you have no preparation for that. You have no mental preparation. And this is something that clearly is so overpowering that it takes a ton of preparation, a ton of self-discipline. Like you said, you needed a mantra leading in the weeks up to when you actually, said, okay, this is day zero. And then if you relapse and you get that nicotine going into your system again, there's no real safety precautions put in place. So I think for long-term successful quitting smoking, I mean, for life, even if you pick it up again, there has to be some kind of preparation. And I would encourage people out there to brainstorm and think about it. Call in. Let us know what other preparation could be put in place, maybe some kind of emergency plan that, okay, I messed up, smoked a couple cigarettes, and here I am finding myself wanting to buy a pack, or I'm finding myself, I smoked a pack and now I'm back on the horse and I need to get off it ASAP. There should be like some kind of protocol put in place that nicotine cannot be in your system for longer in a certain period of time if a relapse ever does occur. Something like that needs to be created.
Right. And I would say be cognitive with your self-talk and realize, or at least attempt your very best to realize when you're talking to yourself and when that addiction is talking to you. And it's hard to tell sometimes because you'll try to trick yourself into thinking that it's okay. You know, like it's okay to just go have another cigarette or go buy a pack. So you be very in tune with your thought process and be very in tune with who is talking, because there's you and then there's the smoker. Make sure that you're listening to you and not to the smoker.
Good advice. Good advice. Last question that I have for you, and it's actually a kind of a multi-part, and it has to do with other preparations that you did. Like, I know you had to clean out ashtrays because if there's a half-smoked cigarette, you're like me, you get to day two and it's been 24 hours, and you know, you almost are getting sweats. Your body is really, really fighting not having nicotine. It's not liking it. Your brain's not functioning correctly. Your words aren't coming the way they should be. It's almost like neurons are misfiring. You got a cigarette there, it's going to get smoked.
That, dude, that half-smoked cigarette looks like a bar of gold.
Yeah. I mean, I even told people in this podcast, one of the most disgusting things I ever had done before is at one point I didn't have cigarettes or have access to them. And I was full-blown addicted to them. I don't think I could even buy them at that point. I didn't think I'm not sure if I had a job or not, but I didn't have cigarettes. Let's just say that much. And there was a half, like two-thirds left fresh cigarette in an ashtray at a gas station. And I picked that out of the ashtray and smoked it. And
this might surprise you. I actually listened to that story of yours on your podcast.
Oh, yeah. So it does surprise me. That threw me completely off. But yeah, that was nasty. But at the time, I was like, whatever. You know, it's just a.
Yep.
You know, and I didn't think about whose lips that could have touched or anything of
Same
that nature.
Mono, man.
Yeah. Right. So. Stuff like that, what kind of preparations did you do? Did you have to tell people around you, hey, this is what it is?
I didn't necessarily tell people around me that I didn't want them to give me cigarettes, or if I ask for a cigarette, don't give me one. I didn't necessarily do any of that. Okay. I did clear out all of my ashtrays. I did start a snack routine. I made sure that I had plenty of snacks to go to work with me. Again, healthy snacks. And I had a wonderful, wonderful support person in my life who was my number one fan. And that helped a lot. I'm actually, full disclosure, I'm actually getting ready to move out of our house into a new house, and I came across this little chalkboard that she made me that I don't remember what it said on it. I could probably go fish it out of a box, but I think it said something like, you can do it, I you know, you can do it, baby, or something like that. And it was just this little daily reminder that I wasn't in it alone, and having a support group for it was good.
And you having heard my story, then you probably know that I had the conversation with my girlfriend in regards to the whole disappointment factor and the shame that you can get from somebody that you tell you, okay, I'm going to quit, and they really want you to quit. Maybe they're a non-smoker. And then when you relapse, they can default to that because they don't. It's hard to get that balance, right? And get them to understand that, I might fail at this, but what's important here is that I have it in my brain that I've decided I don't really, there's part of me that doesn't want this. And that's probably the biggest step, is to be able to say, okay, I don't want this in my life anymore. And there's at least a part of me that does want to quit. And getting to understand the power in that in itself, that's half the war. The other half has to happen only by the individual can win that. It's no amount of force. It's no amount of shame or somebody being upset with you or anything of that nature that will actually solidify. It has to be an individual saying no.
Right. And I don't think, and I 100% agree with that. I agree with that shame feeling. And I have to tell myself in those scenarios that, like, they, just depending on who your support group is or your support person, they're not upset with you. Mm-hmm. They know how badly you want it, and they will want it tenfold more for you because they care about you. And you have to remember that when you're feeling that shame in that situation, that it's not, they're not upset with you. They're in the struggle with you, and they're hurting because of the struggle that you're going through at the same time.
Well, 'cause in the end, I mean, when it's all said and done, when you've quit something, you look back at it and go, oh, it was just a choice. But the actual length of time that choice takes to make, I think it's hard for a person that's not addicted to understand. It's not a short-term choice. That's a weird terminology because it can be confused with other things. Maybe there should be better words created to describe this, but it's a choice that actually has to be made over a stretch of time, and it has to be an everyday choice for that period of time in order for it to be effective. Yeah, there's no way that it can be just that, hey, I don't want to smoke, or hey, I'm going to try to smoke, or try not to smoke. That's not going to do it, and that's just the initial step. So, I know you guys eventually found a balance, but there was a point in time where she didn't know how to handle that. And her first reaction was like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Exactly.
And she would be mad at anybody around you that also was addicted. And I will say, like, that for me was part of my process is kind of, and I know it's harsh, but part of my process was removing myself from people that smoke until I got it under control to a point where I could be around it and not want to hit it or bum a cigarette, to where I felt strong enough for myself to just be able to be around it. Same with like drinking beer.
Oh, are you drinking now?
No, it's my birthday. It should be, but no, unfortunately my birthday's on a Monday this year.
That was a perfectly timed hiccup.
Right. it was speaking. Might be subliminal here. My brain just like you should be drinking right now. But I had to distance myself from these things, just for a little bit to build up that strength before I could come back around. And I think that our significant others can look at other people like you're enabling them because you're around. But that's really hard when you're dealing with friendships and you're dealing with, you know, everyday things like birthdays. So maybe a good idea, if you're going to plan your stop date, make sure you're planning it in a way where you're not going to have any social gatherings that you can plan, that you can predict for at least 30 days. So any super close friends' birthdays that you never miss their birthday, that should be a month that you avoid. should definitely be a month you avoid.
And it's okay to prolong your quit date to ensure your success.
Yes.
That's why mine was the day after my birthday. So it's you've been smoking your whole life. If you go another 3 weeks to align your quit date with some time that you know is going to be easier for you, anything that will make it easier is the best idea, the best decision. I recently read, well, so this was about a year ago. I recently read a book called Win, The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing by Daniel Pink. And he gives you, in that book, he gives you a list on if you're going to quit something or if you're going to start something new. Like if you're going to quit smoking, you're going to start an exercise routine, you're going to start going to the gym, that the day that you choose to do it will actually benefit your success more so than any other day. And he says to combine it with either significant events in your life. For me, it was the day after my birthday, or the day after, you know, if you're in the States, the day after the 4th of July, you know, Independence Day, Mother's Day, and to co-align it with specific days of the week as well. So another name drop, I know, but that I would definitely recommend anyone who's getting ready to quit smoking to read that book. It's it has nothing to do with quitting smoking, but everything to do with timing. And, you know, you're going to have a lot of time on your hands. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the episodes that I decided to talk about a little bit, is that just, there's so much time that opens up when you're not taking that 5 minute smoke break every 2 hours. Sometimes even more close together than that, there's so much time frees up throughout the week, and it's incredible. So yeah, man. Well, hey, do you have anything lastly you want to add? I know we're pushing the hour mark, and I gotta let you get to sleep. You gotta work in the morning early. So
yeah. My, I guess, closing thoughts would be, and I think I said it earlier, but I'll just kind of reiterate it. Don't give up. Don't give up on on yourself. Realize that it's not the end of the world that you had a cigarette. Just realize that it's not something that you want to continue, and that you are making a conscious effort to quit smoking. And self-talk. Pay attention to yourself. Realize which inner voice is talking to you, whether it's the addicted inner voice or you, the person that wants to quit, or your neighbor's dog.
Well, all right, man. Thank you so much for spending the time with me and with us. And audience, if you have any questions for Philippe, go ahead and call in anchor.fm, or if you want to add to the conversation at all, definitely do that, and we'll add you guys to this episode. Philippe, thank you so much. I hope you have a good night, man.
Absolutely. Hey, happy birthday, sir.
Thank you.
And my mantra restarts in like 3 weeks here, so.
Outstanding. Are you doing that leading up to a wedding? You're nuts, man.
I know, yeah. No, I want to, I promised her I'd be smoke-free by then. So okay. My mantra starts in about 3 weeks, and I'll keep you guys updated with my progress.
No, I would love that. That would be amazing. I think everybody else would like that as well. And, you know, it'd be really, really interesting to hear another journal. So if you end up doing some kind of audio log and you want to come back and plug that, definitely do it. Or whatever you decide to do on this new journey. That's awesome, man. Cool. I'm rooting for you. And you know who to call if you need any kind of advice. And you definitely have this podcast to follow you out day at a time. It's a little micro reward. All right, brother.
Well, absolutely, man.
Thank you for your time.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, and good luck to you, sir, and good luck to everyone else out there who's on the wagon right now. So good luck to you guys, and of course, happy birthday, sir.
Thank you very much. All right, guys, I'll see you at the end of day 29. We're wrapping up the final 3 days. 29, well, I don't know. This was the third day, so the final 2 days. Oh, man. God. It's been really hard to think of content for y'all. Okay, well, we'll see you on the other end. Bye.